Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast. This is episode 163. I am Mel. Hello out there. Hope you're all doing all right. And before we carry on with this week's show, I should remind you that the latest issue of Metal Hammer magazine is out right this very second. It stars the one and only Gojira. It's an awesome issue. You can find it in shops around the UK, or you can order it direct to your door from tinyurl.com/gethammer. We also have some very cool Gojira bundles on the way as well that are about to be unveiled imminently, so look out for those. And this week's show is dedicated to an interview that I did only yesterday with the one and only Rhea Ripley. She is the current defending WWE Raw Women's Champion. She's defending her title this Sunday at WrestleMania Backlash, and she's also a huge lifelong metalhead. So we talked about her journey into metal, how she got into the scene through bands like Of Mice and Men and Motionless in White and Suicide Silence. We talk about her history of wrestling as well, how hard it was getting into wrestling coming out of Adelaide, Australia, and how she ended up bringing both those passions together to become, I think quite safely, the most metal wrestler in the world right now. It's a really awesome chat. She's a fascinating person. And if you're a metalhead and you're a WWE fan, I know you're going to be rooting for her this Sunday at WrestleMania Backlash. So without further ado, let's take it straight to the chat that I had with Rhea Ripley. Let's go. All right, I'm here with Rhea Ripley. How are you doing, Rhea?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. All good. I know it's a very busy week for you. You're defending the WWE Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania Backlash this Sunday against Asuka and Charlotte Flair. That's a stacked match, isn't it?
It sure is. It sure is. It's going to be absolutely crazy. I'm just mad that I can lose the championship without getting pinned.
Technicalities. You'll be fine, I'm sure. I mean, you've had an amazing year and couple of years with WWE, really. And I guess your incredible rise through the ranks of WWE has really kind of accelerated in the last few months. But obviously, most of your main roster run so far has kind of been in front of no fans. So what's it been like making that step up into the big leagues, but having to do it where you're not able to feed off the kind of reactions to know that it's all kind of going as planned?
It is very, very strange. It's very strange. At least I've had like a whole year to sort of get used to it. But going into like a different brand and not having like the proper crowd reaction of like a live crowd, it's just, it is very strange. And you don't know whether they're liking or they're hating what you're doing. So it's just like, you really got to pay attention to everything else, like social media, what people are saying to you, like feedback. You got to really listen to everything else because it's just really, really difficult.
Yeah, I can only imagine, to be honest. We're going to take it right back as well, because a lot of our readers and listeners, I'm sure, will know exactly who you are. Some who aren't so familiar with WWE might like to know a bit of backstory. Some of these facts may be taken from Wikipedia, so do correct me if I'm wrong on any of these. journalistic integrity in full flow here. You were born in Adelaide, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And is that where you grew up as well? So you spent most of your early life?
Yeah, Adelaide, South Australia. Been there my whole life. That's cool. About it.
What was it actually like to kind of grow up in as in the kind of early 2000s?
It was nice. It was relaxing. I really did enjoy my childhood. I was a very like outdoors kid. So I just like, I played every sport that you could, and I loved camping. We would go camping all the time and it was great. My childhood was fantastic. I have no like real complaints about it. It was just, family time was always fantastic. And I love Adelaide, South Australia. I can't wait to go back home, to be completely honest.
Oh, fair. That's fair. I'm sure it's been difficult being elsewhere during the pandemic. Now there's obviously two main sides of your personality and what you do that we're interested in. One is wrestling, one is metal. when it comes to the wrestling side of stuff, I read that The Miz was the wrestler that inspired you as a kid. Is that true?
Yeah, The Miz, Triple H, and even CM Punk. I don't know. I love them guys. Triple H was such a badass and he could beat anyone up. And then The Miz and CM Punk, they had that different side where they could just like talk for like forever. And I found that really intriguing. And it was like always great to watch. I would be so kept like, I don't know, I'd sit at the TV and I just watched them talk and I loved it. And even watching like The Miz wrestle, like it's just a different sort of style because he isn't like the biggest dude in the ring, and he's normally a heel, so he's normally running away. And I don't know, it's just so different. I love watching it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, was he kind of your first exposure to wrestling? What kind of hooked you in and made you think, you know, this is beyond just a hobby. This is something I'm really, really invested in.
Yeah, I mean, Triple H was the reason that I started watching wrestling. I watched a match with him and Ric Flair, and just the amount of brutality in that match alone, like, I was like, okay, I have to try this. I really want to do this, because, like, I don't know, I've always been a brutal kid, and I've played every sport. I loved soccer, I loved netball, I loved rugby, I loved karate, I loved everything, especially, like, the contact sports. So looking at, like, wrestling and watching how brutal it was sometimes, I don't know, it really brought me in. I love weapons, I love all that sort of stuff. So, like,
violence,
yeah. I'm a very violent individual.
Well, you've ended up in the right line of work for that, right? If you're gonna get it out, sure. That's where to do it. Environment was there in Australia at the time to actually pursue a career in wrestling? Because obviously over here in England, I guess it's kind of a similar scenario. Like, we had some independent wrestling, but it wasn't really like the scene we know today. So if you kind of, once you decided, like, I actually want to do wrestling, I want to do this with my life, like, how do you even start doing that from Adelaide?
So I went on family holiday to Queensland when I was younger. And at that time, we had no idea that there was wrestling in Australia. Like, no idea. Had never heard of it, had never seen anything about it. Just watched WWE and that was it. But when we were in Queensland, we stumbled across a wrestling flyer for one of the shows that was going to be on, I think it was the next day or something, and we're like, we have to go. So we went to that show, and I just had so much fun being in the crowd. I was like, the only, like, live wrestling I really saw was WWE when they came once a year. So it was real nice to actually watch another wrestling show with, like, people that I didn't know. So then when I went back to Adelaide, South Australia, I found Riot City Wrestling. Like, I looked it up. I was like, I got to find wrestling in South Australia. I have to. And I looked it up, and we found Riot City, and we went there for 2 years. And at that time, wrestling was, like, it was so quiet. Like, no one ever talked about it. No one ever said that they liked watching wrestling, because they were embarrassed most of the time, which sucks, because I wish that someone would have said something to me. But, yeah, it's definitely grown a lot over the last few years, and I'm so happy about that, because it was unheard of when I first started. Like, the crowds were, they were big, but they weren't as big as they are now. Like, we had maybe 100 to 200 people in the crowd. Now, sometimes they'll get, like, 500. And I'm like, yes, like, finally, like, wrestling's growing in Australia. And more superstars are coming out of Australia and going to, like, America, UK, Japan, like, anywhere they can. And they're getting their names out there. And they're also getting the Australian wrestling scene out there, too. So I'm so happy to see how far it's come, and I'm glad that I get to be on the platform that I am and sort of represent Adelaide, South Australia, and just Australia as a whole, because, like, it's putting eyes on the promotions there, and people are going on YouTube and they're watching them and they're just getting more viewers, and I love it.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how it's grown over the last 20 years. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, as well as providing you with a career ambition, wrestling also eventually turned you towards one of your other major passions, which is metal. And I read that one of the first kind of heavy rock songs you really got into was To Be Loved by Papa Roach, because it was actually the theme song for Monday Night Raw. So is that, yeah, that's how that whole thing started, is it?
Yeah, for sure. I was a huge Papa Roach fan after that. Like, that song, I don't know, it was just so catchy. I was like, I need to, like, listen to this more. And, like, because I would watch Raw all the time, like, I got to listen to it. And then eventually, you know how you go on YouTube and you're, like, listening to a band, and then it's, like, a random playlist, and the next one comes on, you're like, oh, this band's cool. It was sort of like that, and I just, like, listened to all these new, like, cool bands, and I'd write down the names, and then I'd download the songs and, like, listen to them, and eventually it just, like, I don't know, my love just sort of grew for it, and I would be in class in, like, high school listening to it when no one else listened to the same music as me. Oh, man. But, yeah, Papa Roach was definitely the beginning, and I'm glad that wrestling could introduce me to that.
Amazing. It's funny, because my next question was going to be, how did you go about discovering bands in that time? Because I'm in my mid-30s, so I still just come from the time of, like, CDs, right? So you would go through YouTube and get through to stuff. So did you kind of
discover albums that way? Would you get into whole albums, or was it more like you build like playlists and just get into different songs and just spread the love for metal around that way? Like, how did you kind of really get stuck into metal?
It was more like just random playlists. I tried to find as many different bands that I could find. And then, like, it's weird because I found my bands, like my group, and then I didn't want to download like more songs. So I sort of just like stuck with them.
Yeah.
And I've been stuck with them since high school. And then like normally I'll listen to more from the bands, and then it will get to like the whole album and I'll listen to everything. But it's just like there's so much good music out there. And even now, like, I'm slowly starting to like let myself find new bands.
Well, who was the first band that you really, even if it wasn't kind of on an album level, who was the first band that you really felt like you clicked with after Papa Roach? Like, I know, like, you're a big Suicide Silence fan, for instance. So is that one of the early bands you got into at that time?
Yep. Of Mice and Men. They were one that I really connected with when I was, like, growing up. So, like, I was definitely fully into them growing up. They were my number one band for sure. Now I love Motionless and White. I just absolutely love them.
Awesome. What is it that's kind of that made you gravitate towards them more recently?
I don't know. I don't know what it would be. I think it's just their style of music, and I also love watching their music videos as well. I get so distracted watching them. Like sometimes I'll just play them and I'll sit there watching them like a movie for like hours. I'm just like, they put so much effort into it. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, they're one of the bands, I think there were a few bands that came around in that kind of mid-noughties, late noughties metalcore scene that sounded great, but maybe didn't have a whole lot going on visually, but kind of Chris and Motionless and White really brought that sense of theatricality back to that kind of portion of metal bands, yeah. Right? So like when you get into a band like that, it's not just about the music, it is about the way they look, it's about the art form, it's about the videos, everything. And they really kind of created a world around themselves.
Everything. And it's funny because I still remember the first time I got to see them live. It was at Soundwave in Australia, and I didn't know that they were playing at that time. And like at that time in my life, I only knew like a couple of their songs, but I really still wanted to see them live because like they're so cool, and I got to see like a few of their live performances on YouTube. So I was like, I really want to see them, and I didn't realize that it was the time. And I honestly, like, from like 100-150 meters away, I heard the song that I know, and I was like, oh my god! And I just like, I left my friends and my family behind. I sprinted.
Did the festival sprint? Yeah.
Yep. And you could just see me. I was running, and I just jumped straight into the middle of the mosh pit. And they're like, "Where'd she go?"
Excellent. That's amazing.
So much fun.
You mentioned that just now as well, that kind of, you said people used to kind of take the mick out of you and pick on you a bit for the way you were. What was all that about? Was that to do more with being like a metal fan or just a general outsider, or what was that about?
It's a bit of everything, really. It's funny because like at the time, I don't really stand up for myself at all, to be completely honest, but like, I'd sit in class and I'd listen to like my music and I'd get carried away and I'd start head banging and then I'd start like singing along to it and like moshing out a little bit in class, and then I'd look over and my friends would be laughing at me and like filming me and all that sort of stuff. So like I didn't really fit in with that sort of stuff. I didn't listen to any of the same music as they did. And then also just like my appearance, I've always been a bulkier sort of child. Like I've always had muscle, I've always had broad shoulders. I've never really fit in that way, and I've always been picked on for that as well. So I've always felt like somewhat of an outsider with every single friend group that I had, except for the wrestlers.
Mm.
That's when like, I felt like all us outsiders sort of came together and made our own little group.
Yeah, because I was going to say, is that kind of a good example of where wrestling kind of appealed to you as an outsider, because it is a place where strong women, athletic women are really celebrated?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely felt more normal being with my wrestling crew, even though at the time I was 16 and they're all like in their late 20s, early 30s. I still felt like they were my crew and my squad. So like, and we all listened to the same music too, which was fantastic. Like every time we'd go into the gym and like work out before wrestling training, my coach would be blasting heavy metal. Like absolute blasting it, and
amazing.
It just made the environment so good, and I think that's what made my love for heavy metal even more as well.
Amazing. One of the things that's influenced you in terms of bringing that metal side of your personality into your aesthetic and your kind of wrestling character, for want of a better term, is you've introduced the kind of deathcore stomp into your entrances, which I love. And I kind of mentioned, you've said before you're a Suicide Silence fan. I was wondering if that was like a Mitch thing specifically.
Yeah, it is. It's the Luck of Stomp.
Amazing. So how did you get into Suicide Silence? When did they first kind of come into your life?
When I was listening to Of Mice and Men, one of their songs popped up on the playlist, and I sort of just started listening to them from then. And I was really like, I love that all the bands I listened to were very, very close with each other as well. So like every time they'd go on tour, they'd all like be hanging out and like post photos. And I love the click they had with each other, that whole group, like even like, they're not as heavy, but like Pierce the Veil and Sleeping with Sirens, like all those group of dudes, they all like hung out together and they were like a band family sort of thing. And they were the sort of bands that I listened to. But yeah, I don't know. I really liked Suicide Silence, and also just like their film clips as well. They're always fantastic to watch. I just fell in love with them, and I still do. Like I still have my Mitch Lucker memorial shirt that came out ages ago, and it's still my favorite shirt. I still wear it at least twice a week, at least. Like I try and wash it to wear it more often.
How old were you when he died, if you don't mind me asking? Because I'm just thinking, you know, I was already working at Metal Hammer by then, and it was awful news when that came through. But like as a kind of a young fan, I can imagine that hit you in a whole different way.
Yeah, for sure. So that was like 2012. So that's when I first started wrestling. So I would have been 16.
Wow. So that must have been a really difficult thing for a young fan to have someone you looked up to so much suddenly just gone.
Yeah, it was horrible. And like the way that he went as well was absolutely horrible. I remember going to my friend's house. Like we had family friends, and they were the people that I watched wrestling with and the people that I listened to music with. And their daughter, she loved Mitch as well. And I found out, and I went straight to their house, and we just cried. We just cried for like a good couple of hours in her room until we calmed down. It was just such a sad day. And like, it still is sad thinking about it. And it should have never happened. It should have never happened. But
it felt like very unnecessary thing.
Yeah, for sure. It's always sad when someone that you like look up to or admire just like passes away. It definitely does suck, but I mean, his legacy is still here.
Yeah, so. Of course. And you're carrying it on yourself with that entrance, which is such a cool but subtle way. It's kind of those things that metalheads like. It's like if you know, you know.
Yeah. I've had a few people comment on it on like social media. I'm like, yeah. Definitely,
awesome.
You know what I'm doing.
You've also got your entrance music, which is metal as hell. You got Ash from New Year's Day on there. How did she get involved in that song, and how did she end up actually singing you to the ring at WrestleMania this year? That must have been a cool moment.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. So when it came to like making my music, I told them that I wanted something like the song that I had at that current time that I couldn't keep, Final Straw. I love that song and I thought it was cool, and the way that like it was a woman singing it, and I liked that. So when they wrote this new song for me, they just got Ash Costello. They didn't even ask me. They just got her. And I was like, oh, that's bloody sick. I'm not going to complain at all. I love Ash Costello. Oh, my God. I was like, that's actually really bloody cool. And then, like, just being able to sort of have this music and grow a friendship with Ash that I didn't think that I would ever have, it's, like, super awesome as well. To have her and New Year's Day come to WrestleMania and play my entrance out to the ring, like that was such a special moment for me, and like my inner child was like marking out while being on stage for so many different reasons. Like I was marking out that I was performing at WrestleMania and that I had like Ash and New Year's Day right next to me, and they're also like so excited, and we get to like be excited for each other. I don't know, it was such a cool moment, and it was definitely one of my highlights.
Yeah, you joined a kind of quite unique little group of wrestlers when that happened, because you had like Triple H obviously had Lemmy playing him down to the ring. CM Punk had Living Colour playing him down to the ring. And it's kind of like such an unusual opportunity when you've got these two such huge passions, wrestling and heavy music, and you get to combine them on, I mean, the biggest platform imaginable for the biggest moment. I just can't imagine what that was like.
Yeah, it's just, it definitely made my WrestleMania moment very special. Very, amazing. Very special. And like, I got so many memories from that day, like just chilling with the band and trying to like go through my entrance with them. And like, I don't know, just seeing how excited they were to be there as well. It's just, I love how wrestling and music can bring so many different people together. I really do love it.
It really can. And on that note, it seems like the kind of further you've got on with WWE, and I guess even in your wrestling career in general, like the more your on-screen persona kind of reflects the real you, certainly in terms of like your taste, the person you are, being alternative, being a metal fan, you know, the logo they played to you in the music that you come down to, your theme song itself, the deathcore stomp. I mean, why do you think that part of your personality has ended up coming through so strongly and also actually help people click with your character even more?
I think because that's just like the real me. I think that's always the best wrestling character, per se, character. I think that's always the best in wrestling, to be yourself, but like a 10 times version. So the only difference between like Rhea Ripley and me is like Rhea Ripley's super confident.
It's a weird thing. I was watching a documentary with my girlfriend last night about Sasha and Charlotte. When they did the Hell in a Cell, and my girlfriend's not a big wrestling fan, and she watched it and she kind of went, it's so weird how they're so like chill and normal on camera, but then when they go into the ring they're like these superheroes. It seems like it's hard to kind of pair those two things together.
I know, it's so strange. I'm like, I don't know where all this confidence comes from when I go out there, but it does, because like in my normal day life, like I'm just like a quiet, like sort of shy person. I'm just like, like I'll sit in the corner by myself, I don't mind. But like at work, I'm just like this whole different animal, but it's like the true me that I wish I could present in everyday life.
When you think about that, and think as well about the fact that, you know, people did used to pick on a bit, people used to treat you a certain way because of the way you dressed and your taste and stuff. Like, I mean, how important do you think it is to be able to have a person like you and like the character Rhea Ripley on mainstream TV in 2021? Because I'm sure there'll be a lot of young women who might look a certain way or are into certain things and dress a certain way that look to you as an example of like, I'm represented. That's awesome.
Yeah, dude, it's amazing. I am so thankful that I could be that person for everyone. Like the amount of messages that I get on like Instagram about how people are so happy that I'm within WWE because it makes them feel confident within themselves and it makes them accept themselves for who they are. Like, that's so special and that makes me so happy. Like, that's the one thing that I really want to get across to everyone, is like just to be themselves and be happy with themselves and love themselves. Because like, if anyone, like people love to judge others, it's just what people love to do, and unfortunately that's the truth. But let people judge you, is as long as you love yourself for who you are and you portray yourself as the true you, then you can't really go wrong. Like, if people don't like you, they don't have to be in your life. The true ones will stay. And I just want people to be comfortable within their own skin, because I didn't really have that too much as a kid. So I'm glad that I could help other people like actually love themselves.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it definitely feels like a kind of sea change in the way the alternative is treated in the mainstream, which is great. I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Do you think you're the most metal wrestler ever? And if not, who's more metal than Rhea Ripley?
Oh, my God.
Because, I mean, I know there's some contenders, but when you see you do the entrance and everything else, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much as metal as it gets.
Yeah, I feel like I'm pretty metal.
That's the Paul quote right there, Rhea Ripley. I feel like I'm pretty metal. Like
pretty metal.
No one's arguing with you over that. Do you know what I mean? What about wrestling itself then? Do you think like wrestling has got more metal than ever? Because it feels to me as a fan of both forms that like you can see the alternative culture being represented in WWE and in numerous other promotions like never before.
Yeah, oh, definitely, especially in NXT. I feel like that's where metal really thrives. And I absolutely love that about NXT because it makes it so different and unique. And yeah, I think that they're really like catering to like my metal people, which I love.
Because we see like we've seen like bands like Power Trip and Code Orange, and I think the NXT theme is Slipknot at the moment, right? So
I think so, yeah. I think it still is, which is amazing. Like
so crazy.
I love it. Like I didn't even know that song before it was on NXT, unfortunately. But like now I know it, and I downloaded it straight away as soon as it got changed to Slipknot. I was like, oh, this is a banger.
It's so cool because you wouldn't think of people not kind of knowing Slipknot or knowing certain Slipknot songs at this point in time. But like the idea that wrestling is turning new people onto Slipknot, like that's just so awesome. That's so exciting that it has the power to do that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely. And it's great because then you'll get little kids growing up and they'll be just like me.
Exactly. That's what we want. We want more Rhea Ripley's. Really quickly, talk to me about your finish of the Riptide, because the pump handle, I remember Road Dogg doing that in the Attitude Era, right? And like at the time it was a cool finisher, but like it wasn't kind of seen as like, you know, like a stunner or a switch of music or a tombstone. It wasn't kind of like one of the top tier finishes. And you've kind of brought it back as like the one of the most badass finishes. So where did that come from? It's like as a move that you decided to bring back into the conversation?
Honestly, it was just a move that hadn't been done for a long, long time.
But it works, because like, now when you do it, it's like, bam, like it looks legit.
Yeah, I do throw people down a bit viciously.
That's that violence coming back in.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just so hard to think of like a finisher that I could do and that I could do to anyone and pull out of sort of anywhere that wasn't like an RKO that was already being used and like a big deal. Like it was really, really difficult to find something, especially because like in NXT, when I was there to begin with, I wasn't a big name. So I couldn't just like be like, this is my finishing move, because then someone would go and do it on TV and I'm like, well, can't use that now. So like, I'm like, no one really likes the pump handle for some reason. So like, let me do it. And I practiced it a few times, got better and better with it. And now I feel like I finally like perfected it, which is great. And it's done the job for me a few times. So I can't really complain.
I guess as well, it's like, obviously we're used to seeing really athletic women in WWE, but like those kind of big power moves as a finisher isn't something we're quite so used to seeing in that division. So that's quite a cool thing to see as well.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely wanted a power move. That's 100% what I wanted. But I wanted something that I could do on anyone as well. So pump handle is, it's fantastic.
Awesome. Finally, you mentioned you kind of started getting into a few more bands. You've finally broken out of the mid-2000s playlist core. Are there any kind of newer bands you're really into at the moment or you'd like to shout out, or anything you're listening to right now in general that you're really high on?
I still love my Motionless and White. Still listening to them every single day.
Amazing. Amazing. What's on your hoodie? Is that a metal band?
No, this is actually Blackcraft.
Oh, it's Blackcraft. Of course it is. So the font was so metal, I couldn't even read it.
I know, right? I love this jumper. It's definitely been worn good.
Amazing.
But I just started listening to Attila, actually. And I don't know how he scream raps so quickly.
Yeah.
It's very intriguing to me. Like I listen to it and I try and like mimic it, because I also like, I love singing along to the songs, even though I suck. Like,
I was going to really say, can you do a death growl? Because I certainly can't.
No, I can't do it at all. I suck at singing in general, but I really do try in the car, and it's so hard to like keep up with him. And I'm like, how do you do this? So like, they're one that I've just started listening to, and I find them really entertaining.
Awesome. Well, look, I think our time is just about up here. So, Rhea, thanks so much for talking to us. Good luck on Sunday. We're obviously all going to be rooting for you. Everyone in the world of metal wants you to keep carrying the torch. thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
No problem at all. Thank you so much. Let's hope that I can pull out the win.
Yeah, come on. Riptide for life.